listening to the Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3. I'm Jenna Barr. Good morning to you. It's time for the Garden Line with Mike Wiggins. So text in, call in, get your questions in ASAP as in possible. And it will be possible for Mike to answer. 850-437-1620. There's nowhere to run. Martha Reeves kicking
nowhere
it
to
off.
Hide.
There's nowhere to hide.
Absolutely.
Nowhere to hide from the heat. We're in a heat advisory today. It's Tuesday.
We are. So be careful. I'll have to tell you that with the heat advisory, and I hope my neighbors aren't too mad at me, but I got out and mowed my lawn at 6:15 in the morning. I usually, for any lawn equipment, I wait till 8 o'clock because I figure folks are up and about by then. But I'll tell you right now, I wasn't going to do it later in the day. So I just I got it at 6:15. I was done by 7, and boy, I was better off. So we need to do those little things. Work early in the morning, work maybe later in the afternoon in the yard until we get past this. And we will. We will. I mean, we're approaching Labor Day. We're going to have a little break in the weather. You know, not much. It won't take much, you know, to get us back into the high 80s as opposed to the mid-90s. So, anyway, heat advisory today. Be very, very careful.
Yes, be careful. And if you have a question about mowing your lawn or anything, please text it in. I'm getting a couple of texts. I'm making sure I read them first. What's on your mind today,
well,
Mike?
Well, a couple of things. Number one, there's one word I would like to leave our listeners with today. It has nothing to do with gardening. That one word is vote.
Oh, okay.
Vote.
Yes.
Vote. Now is the time. I looked it up, and I think there are 10 locations where one can do early voting in the county. You can early vote from, well, Saturday the 13th, which we pass that, through Saturday the 20th. So that's coming up. So early voting is so easy. It's usually not that crowded, and it's just a great way to vote. But if you don't early vote, or if you don't vote by mail, be sure to go to your precinct. Obviously, if you don't know where your precinct is, David Stafford, who's our supervisor of elections, is the best in the business. I mean the best in the state of Florida, in my opinion. And his office is so helpful, they'll guide you through the voting process no matter what your questions are. But the important thing is to vote. Gina and I could probably sit here and tell you who to vote for, but we're not going to do that. We just want you to go vote for the person of your choice.
We have very good options, but always a good reminder to do some research.
Absolutely.
I drove by, or rode by, sorry, went for a bike ride downtown and went by Spring Street Library. It is so funny, all the signs. I mean, I can't even read them. It was just, so you know where to vote, right?
Oh yeah, go down.
It's not a hidden secret.
Yeah,
where to vote.
Drive down 9th Avenue.
That's right.
And look to your right at Pensacola State College. It's a genealogy.
That's a really
building there.
Easy place to go vote. I've done it there too.
Oh, absolutely. I dropped by there to support a candidate of my choice the other day, just to say good luck.
Sure.
And people were out. You know, everybody was out waving and all that. Almost every person running for office was there. It was so interesting, and it was crowded, people voting. So that's all good, and this is a way to express your views. And Jenna, you're right on target. It's not hard to learn. Now, with the internet, you can just, if you know somebody, you hear somebody's name, you know, Google them, and you can learn a whole lot.
Also, contact them. We have very reachable individuals who are running right now, whether it's local or excuse me, state representatives. Contact them, whether through social media, email, through their websites. A lot of them will reach back out and continue a conversation.
Well, there's no question about that. That's one thing I used to love about city government, is that you're so close to your citizens. I mean, they know where you live, they know generally your phone number, and they can call with their concerns, and that is great government. A lot of people say local government is the best government if you're going to serve, because you are close to the citizens, you're close to the issues, and you can have an honest and civil debate, and that's what makes it good. That's what makes it work.
Very good. Yep, it's voting season. It's also hot season. Hot one today, this Tuesday, August 16th. Kids are back in school. We are moving. Let's see. I wanted to get to a question real quick about vegetable gardens, but before that, I was going to ask you a question. Now it just fell out of my brain. I'm so sorry about that. We have a couple texts coming in. Paul from Blue Sky said that we can all vote for him. It's time for his rise to power.
I think that's a great idea. You can always write somebody in.
Exactly.
So you may want to wait until the general election in November so you can write Paul in for president of the United States.
Exactly.
The president's not on the ballot. It's primary, but Paul, we're with you, buddy. We're with you, buddy. Sorry I couldn't write you a check for the campaign, but we'll say nice things about
you. Exactly. It's 9:13 on the Pensacola Expert Panel. I'm Jenna Barr. Mike Wiggins is here to answer your questions this Tuesday morning on the Garden Line. If you can't catch the whole episode, you can catch it on Saturdays at 9 or on our website, newsradio923.com. Look for the Garden Line podcast and questions in about when's the best time to start a vegetable garden. We've got some pictures for you to diagnose. So what do you want to start with, though, before we get to that?
Well, one thing I want to start with, I've noticed in my yard, quite frankly, I only have a couple of them, but my neighbors have some of the Encore azaleas, mm-hmm. which mine are kind of dwarf white, and they're blooming up a storm. And that's the nice thing about those Encore azaleas. They live up to their name. They have an encore. They bloom in the spring, but they also bloom in the fall. I've got mine kind of in semi-shade. It gets half a day sun, half a day shade. And, boy, they have thrived. The foliage on them is really, really attractive. Obviously, the blooms are beautiful. Mine are white. But you can get all different colors. And in encores, you can get some that grow a little taller than others. But it's a great plant if you're looking for color in a bed that you're going to get more than just in the spring. So with an azalea. So anyway, encores are good. I did want to mention one thing about pruning and fertilizing encore azaleas, or really all azaleas. Jenny, you want to do that when we come back from the break, or you want to do it now?
Let's do it when we come back from the break, and then also we'll hit the questions about when to start a vegetable garden, a question about pruning some rose bushes, also a question about where you've mentioned before that you've bought some plants online, and our listener would like to know if you can give that tip.
Sure. Sounds good. All sounds fun.
Let's take a break. 850-437-1620.
That dream so real.
One can talk about being in love.
Two can say how it really feels.
One can worship on a star.
Two can make that wish come true, yeah.
9:18, good morning. You are listening to The Garden Line on the Pensacola Expert Panel. I'm Jenna Barr, 850-437-1620 to text into News Radio 92.3 this morning. We were going to talk about what before?
Yeah. Let me briefly just kind of finish up the conversation about the encore azaleas, about any azaleas. As we all know, azaleas set their buds for next year, 2023, generally midsummer. So you don't want to prune them heavily. And we've talked about that on the Garden Line. I think we all know that. However, I always like to stress that if you've got, say, dwarf azaleas or even some indica azaleas, some of the larger growing azaleas, and they've got a lot of new growth on them, and these azaleas are, say, a hedge in front of your house, and all that new growth is kind of unsightly. It needs pruning. It won't hurt the azaleas to prune them lightly, a light haircut. All you may be losing is a little bit of color next year, but you've probably got plenty left. So I would not hesitate to kind of even it up so it looks attractive if that plant, say, is an important part of your landscape and needs to be pruned, if you will. So a light pruning won't hurt. I also would say on your encores, and really all your azaleas, a little fertilizer this time of year is a good idea. My rule of thumb on fertilizing azaleas is a handful for every foot of height. 3 foot azaleas, 3 handfuls. In the fall like this, we're not really in the fall yet, but in August or September, go half of that. Cut it in half. 1.5 for that 3-footer, 1.5 handfuls, tight handfuls of fertilizer. Put it all the way around the drip line of the plant, and then you're set for next year. But those are a couple things we need to do for azaleas to make them really, really look nice. But keep in mind those encores as you're planning your landscape. And talking about planning the landscape, Jenna, I'm hoping in one of our shows, maybe even a little bit today if we have time, need to start talking about some landscape rules, things that we might want to do landscape-wise, because this is a great time to know what did well this year, know what did not do well, changes you want to make, what do you want? Do you want to totally redo your landscape or just replace one or two plants? Anyway, I'd like to, maybe we can get into that conversation a little bit later.
Excellent. Let's talk to Carolyn, about her rose tree.
Yes.
It's given her some issues. It was doing great, and now it's kind of looking, I don't know the other word for it, but it's looking a little naked and sparse.
I'm thinking some of that is just the pure heat. I assume she's got it planted in the full sun where it really needs to be. But keep in mind, a rose tree, you've got the root system, and then you've got for lack of a better word, the stalk, which is grafted to the root system, and then the rose is grafted to the top of the stalk, if you will. In any event, what you've got on top there is probably a tea rose, a regular tea rose that's been grafted so it makes the tree rose. Anyway, long story short, you need to treat that tree rose just like you would a rose bush you have anywhere else. Insofar as the leaves getting sparse, look very closely for black spot, which is what it says. It's a black spot in the center of the leaf. Also look for mildew, just like baby powder that someone's put on it. But also a way to tell what's happening with that rose and many other plants is if you've got leaves that have brown spots on them, if it's on the outer edge of the plant, that generally means it's environmental. Too hot, too cold, too wet, too dry, something on that order. If the discoloration is in the center of the plant, in other words, not on the edge, it's usually a fungus of some sort. So that's a way to do it. What I would do is check for, if it looks like you've got fungus on that tree rose, I'd spray it. We'd put some rose dust on it that has a fungicide in it. I would fertilize it. I think I would go maybe like we did the azaleas, maybe half strength with your rose fertilizer, and then watch your water, and I think probably next year you'll be fine. Let's do some pruning on it, however, next spring, if we can. I mean, if you got a bunch of stragglers and crossing branches, you could do that now. But I would like to wait till, you know, the magic date to prune roses is
Valentine's Day,
right. So if you can wait that long, that's what I would do.
Okay, perfect. Also, a follow-up question. When's the best time to start a vegetable garden?
My goodness. You know, a lot of people think the fall is a better time to start a vegetable garden than the spring. Now, there are a lot of things you can't grow in the fall simply because the days to harvest are too long. You're going to have a freeze or a frost potentially before you hit that note. But you can do it. First of all, important, fall tomatoes are fun. You can start that in August, no doubt about it. And your garden centers probably have those, and that's always fun to do. But then you can do, you know, turnips, cabbage, collards, lettuce, a lot of your greens, and you can plant onions, radishes, that type of thing. Really good in the fall. And it's just the weather, you know, will hopefully cool just a touch, but that hard freeze, one, hope it doesn't come at all. Mm-hmm. But if it does, you've got plenty of time to harvest those. What I would recommend is this. Google fall vegetable planting guide for North Florida. I've got a really good one here that we used to give out to people that lists all the vegetables, and it'll tell you the days to harvest. So you can really pick and choose what you want. But a fall vegetable garden can be very, very productive. Keep in mind, though, if you're transitioning from spring to fall, clean it out good. Probably throw a little lime on the bed where you're going to grow it. Till it all in. Maybe a little bit of slow-release fertilizer or very low-nitrogen fertilizer. Rake it smooth. start over.
Okay. Very good. It's 9:24 on the Pensacola Expert Panel. I'm Jenna Barr. We've got some more texts coming in here. Let's take another quick break. When we come back, we're going to help you out with your fig tree here. So we've got a little fig tree. It started out looking good, but now we've got some discoloration.
Say it in the
oh,
sun.
Oh, boy. So we're going to help you out that with that on the Pensacola Expert Panel. If you have a question, 850-437-1620. Stop what you're doing. You're listening to The Garden Line.
I have no idea who that is. Who is that?
Are you kidding?
That's fun. That's a toe tapper, man.
So I'm about to get so much hate mail, but I'm not a big fan of Elvis Presley. That's Elvis Presley.
It didn't sound like Elvis Presley.
So, I know. He sounded sober. Sorry. I know. I just said it. I'm going to get hate mail. Was never really a huge fan. Like some of his movies, maybe a couple of his songs, but, you know, overall wasn't like...
Right.
I wasn't like, you know, Elvis. Like, no.
I've never heard that one. That's interesting.
Oh, it's one of my favorites.
Really?
Oh, cool. Yeah. Okay, that'll be on our playlist right there.
On the CD we're producing. That's
exactly.
Right. Okay, you got it.
It'll be called the Fig Tree CD. Tell me about these yellow and black spots on this fig tree.
Well, fig trees, number one, let me tell you the one thing that I bet the...
It's a brown turkey fig.
The brown turkey fig, exactly. That's the best variety to plant, the brown turkey fig, which you can get all kind of figs off of, and of course you share those with the birds. You just have to realize that's what's going to happen. Insofar as the discoloration on the leaves can mean so many things. It could be environmental, like we talked about a minute ago. If those brown areas are on the edge of the fig leaf, it could be that it just is in a place that maybe got so hot in some of these extreme heat that we've had. It could be too much water. It could be too much water. Remember, I think I mentioned one time that the old-timers, who were very, very smart, planted fig trees next to a house or a garage or a shed so that the roots were shaded under a structure. I don't really know why, but that's what all the old farmers always tell me. They have successful fig trees. One thing you've got to watch out for, though, is be sure you did not use any weed and feed fertilizer anywhere near a fig tree. A fig tree is the one plant that will react violently to a weed and feed fertilizer being anywhere in the close vicinity. Don't do it.
Keep it away.
Keep it away.
Keep it away. Hey, we've got more coming up on the Garden Line. Larry from Pensacola, you're up next with your question for Mike Wiegand. Stay tuned. We are in a heat wave right now, that's for sure.
We got a heat wave here, there's no doubt about it.
Hey, you're listening to The Garden Line. Mike Wiggins is here to answer your questions. Let's get to Larry. Larry from Pensacola is on the line. Larry, what's your question for Mike? Thanks for holding.
Morning, Larry.
Good morning, Mike, and no problem. I've enjoyed the news. My question about blueberry bushes.
Yes, sir.
But Mike, I know you started that. I listened to the program when it started. I'm riding around this one doing some chores. But the idea of voting, and just a real quick thought, it just saddens me. I'm 75 older, but the low turnout in primaries, well, in general elections too. One state had 25% turnout, and they were for the primary of the registered voters, not eligible voters. And they were thrilled to death. That set a record. That's one in four. And I don't know if the public recognizes that the activists on the right and the left, they're the ones that certainly vote. And if that happens, what you end up coming out of primaries are two extreme candidates. If you don't look out, and that's what you go have to look for in general. Anyway, enough of that.
We'll get to blueberries real quick, but just let me say thank you for your thoughts. You know, we just all need to vote. We're going to elect people that set laws and ordinances and rules and regulations that control our lives. And so we've got to get the right people in office. And we do that by research, learning about them, and going to the polls. And I agree with you. The primary turnout has been just horrible. Very low. Anyway, enough of that. Let's talk blueberries.
Well, real quick on that one, Mike, I've had them in, I've got the six bushes. Three of them are Climax variety. I forgot the other three, but when I put them out there 4, 5, 6, 7 years ago, maybe, you know, what a recommendation was to maybe get two varieties and, you know, better pollination and so on. But, Mike, I've had just no success in them growing. They're bigger than they were when I planted them, but they're not much bigger. And, you know, I get blooms every year, and I get some blueberries, but we probably don't get, I don't know, half a bucket off of them, six bushes during the season, during the spring. And I just don't know. This time of year, I mean, what, they're in an area where they get, I'm kind of in a back up to a wetland, so the ground
right.
stays kind of moist. I don't water them, but the ground's fair. Of course, this year, don't have to worry all the rain. But I don't fertilize them maybe like I should, but is there anything I can do now to get ready, or even in the fall or winter, to get ready for that blooming in the spring to get some growth out of them?
Well, good idea. I'll tell you one thing, let's back up insofar as you've got one variety that you know what it is, and the other variety, which we don't really know. You need to maybe do a little bit of research, because you may need a pollinator in there, which is going to help with your production. In other words, two different types of blueberries. Also, blueberries like an acid soil. I wouldn't put any lime around them, that's for sure. And I might get that soil test to see exactly what it is. If it's really a high pH, you may need to put something like aluminum sulfate or something on there to lower that pH. So that's something to look at also. Otherwise, blueberries, I'd never always hesitate to say things are foolproof, but blueberries, I think, are an underused plant, because they really are attractive. They produce. They are slow growers. They're not going to grow very fast. But by the same token, it's a great plant. So if I were you, one other thing. Here in the fall, I would get, if you're going to fertilize your lawn, let's say with some winterizer fertilizer. Now, keep in mind, no weed killer in it at all. Now, of course, if you're going to use that winterizer fertilizer, which generally has a lot of potash in it, like a 10-5-14, throw a little bit of that around the blueberries. That helps with root growth, which hopefully in the long term, coming into next year, will help you produce more of your blueberries. So that's what I would do. I would get the soil test, check the pH on it, check the pollinator situation as far as what you've got and what you may need, and then a little fertilizer. Those three things that maybe is where I would go.
Well, Mike, I appreciate it. I love them. I'm like you. I tell my wife, I don't know, 10, 12, maybe 20 years ago, if we plant anything in the yard, it's going to be some kind of fruit tree.
There you go.
I've got them planted all over. I've got a persimmon. The persimmon, though, the buds dry them, I'm not going to worry with that.
Yeah, they're kind of hard to grow. Yeah.
I've had trouble. My neighbor, though, has got a big one and gives me persimmons every fall. I love them, too. You know, they're kind of hard. You got to eat them right away. You know how quick they don't last. But
that's right.
Anyway, I thoroughly enjoyed your program. And once again, back to the voting. It's our democracy, folks, and I don't understand. We have early voting. There's no excuse, Mike, and of course, you and I know that. Mike, thank you so much for taking the time.
You bet. Thanks for your comments. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Larry. If you'd like to text or call in, 850-437-1620 to the Pensacola Expert Panel. It's 943 here on the Garden Line. Before we take another break, you've got some more thoughts. I've got some questions coming in while you got them.
I'm ready to go.
Go for it.
Okay. Caladiums. We need to talk about caladiums just a little bit.
The droopies.
Okay. The caladiums, as we get past Labor Day, are going to probably have their better day in the month of September. But what you can do, two things, and I've been, I don't, maybe it's climate change. I don't know. It's really because we really haven't had a hard winter. My caladiums, for the most part, have been coming back. But over the years, when we had more cold weather here in Northwest Florida, if you wanted to save your caladiums, you had to go through some procedures. Now, you could leave them where they are, and historically, when we had cold weather, they would rot. So they were gone. So, but what people do, they dig them up, leave the tops on them, and lay them out somewhere where they'll dry. Let them get good and dry. Then when they're all dry, you clip off the tops, and then you take those bulbs that are now dry, and you hang them somewhere in a garage, somewhere where it's not really going to freeze. Put them in a croaker sack. You know what we used to say? Put them, get some old pantyhose.
Pantyhose?
What are those? And put the, you got to have something that has ventilation. So you don't want to put
know
it.
I don't know if pantyhose have enough
well,
ventilation.
Well, whatever.
But anyways, that's
I don't know. That's
subject.
Another topic. Anyway, put them in something that has some ventilation. And then plant them next year. And of course,
okay,
they've had a whole year to grow, so they're bigger bulbs. You'll have more foliage on them, more color. And so that's what one should do probably in the month of September, even October, for your caladium bulbs. Save them, because they are great. It's a great plant.
Yeah, I mean, that could be a Halloween decoration. You've got pantyhose, just keep them in the legs and you put caladium.
You know what, Jenna?
Dangle
it. You know what, Jenna? I knew not to say that. I knew you were going to be all over that. But keep in mind now, you know, this is some of this advice is old advice that goes back years.
I could tell by your face you immediately regretted
it. I immediately said, why did I ever? Croaker sack, okay.
Croaker sack was,
you know,
great.
An old beach bag, you know, it has a ventilation in it. That's
true.
Okay, too. You know, like,
yeah,
you put your scuba gear in, that type of thing.
That's right. Okay, you can hang it in the garage. Or
in the garage where it's not going to freeze. And then next, late April, mid-April, depending on the weather, May, plant them in the yard again, about, you know, 2.5 times the diameter of the bulb, and you'll have caladiums all next summer.
Perfect.
Without having to buy more.
I like that. Reduce, reuse, recycle. 9:46 on the Pensacola Expert Panel. Buy yourself some pantyhose, and if your wife asks why, tell them Mike Wiggins said to.
Someone who needs me, someone I've needed so long. For once unafraid, I can go where life leads me. Somehow I know I'll be strong. For once I can touch what my heart used to dream of long before I knew.
Good morning. It's 9:49. You're listening to the Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Jenna Barr with Mike Wiggins on the Garden Line this Tuesday morning. Hey, we were talking blueberry bushes and pantyhose. This pantyhose have nothing to do with blueberry bushes.
I knew it.
But
I knew it.
We're never going to live it down.
Let's go back and talk about the armadillo. What
yeah,
do you think? No,
yeah.
Let's don't.
Oh, an armadillo.
Let's don't.
And stuck in pantyhose. It looked like a little like robber. I don't know. We are okay. We are not drinking. I promise. This is
it sounds
not
like
alcohol.
It.
This is a healthy shake. It is 9:50, but it's 5:00 somewhere. Hey, when's the best time to actually plant blueberry bushes or any bush? Somebody else asked another berry bush question, and it's berry bush day because Paul texted a beautiful picture of a berry bush. So berries are on the brain. So when's the best time to actually plant a blueberry bush? Somebody would like to know what is the best way to keep your blueberry bush from freezing in the wintertime?
Well, it shouldn't freeze.
Okay.
Your blueberry bush should be okay. It should be able to get through the winter. I prefer to plant any of those, like fruit trees or blueberries, that type of thing, in January, February, when everything is dormant, if you will. There's not a lot of growth going on. And the transplant usually goes much easier when you do that. However, if you're landscaping and you're ready for it and you buy some nice blueberries that are in a container, say 1 gallon or a 3 gallon container, go ahead and plant them. Just be careful. Just be sure if they are to score those roots. Remember, kind of loosen up the roots a little bit. Throw a little Canadian sphagnum peat moss in the hole, mix that up with the sand, put them in there, and then water them. Even though it's going to be winter in Pensacola, you'll need to water them initially, especially for the first couple of weeks. And you should be fine. You should be fine. Really, you can landscape in Pensacola 12 months out of the year. I mean, you would normally say, well, in August when it's so hot, I'm not going to do it. You've just got to be careful. Where you run into problems, in my opinion, is when you're trying to move a plant from point A to point B. That's because you're going to lose, every time you dig up a plant, you're going to lose some of the root system. You transplant it to a new hole. If you don't get enough water, sometimes that transplant can be a little dicey. But otherwise, if you're planting out of a container, go ahead. Ideal situation is in the cooler months to plant.
Okay. One more follow-up question for the berry bush, blueberries, all the berries. Is there a specific way to plant the blueberry bush? Is there a better tree to plant it by? Is there a better area? I'm trying to plant several edible plants in my yard. What do you recommend?
I think you can plant a blueberry in the sun.
Okay.
I think it'd be fine. Now, if you get a little bit of shade on it, I don't think it's a big deal. That's the nice thing about blueberries. They're very, very hardy. So I think if you, I wouldn't put them in dense shade. I wouldn't do that. But I think if you can put them in the sun or in a little semi-shade, I think they'll do just fine. Just once again, be sure you get healthy plants and be sure that you get the varieties that you need to produce. Your garden center can tell you that, or the internet could probably tell you that too, because it's some, you have to kind of match up different varieties.
Okay. Here's another question. It's about a very persistent weed in our friend's yard here. Let me describe it to you real quick. So the root of the weed looks almost like a turnip. It's very long and hardy. It has almost like a white vinish stem and mint looking leaves, but they said they've been battling it for years. It kind of looks like a caterpillar with a vine attached to it, but the vine is it's the roots. It's very bizarre looking, and they cannot seem to get this weed to go away. Do you have any recommendations?
Hard to say. Hard to say exactly what that weed is, but here's what I would do. If being of what they're describing, it sounds very much like a grassy weed, if you will. A little like a rattlesnake weed, you know, that has kind of that root that looks like a rattlesnake. No doubt about it. So that's probably what we're dealing with here. One, you may have to dig it up. Sometimes those with those real strong roots that the roots itself underneath the ground look like a bowl of spaghetti, sometimes you just got to dig them up as best you can. If they're in your lawn, obviously you want to keep them from coming back year after year. So using the pre-emergence fertilizer, as we've talked about like last week and really most weeks this time of year, is to use that in November. Spray with atrazine. That's a good one, a good pre-emergence liquid, not a fertilizer. It's a weed killer. And go ahead and do that in November, then do it again in February, and that's about the best you can do other than using a chemical that kills everything, which would also kill your grass, and then replant and resod that area, or just dig them up. It sounds like very similar to a potato vine. A potato vine doesn't have that kind of foliage, but it's got that big, strong root that is very, very hard to control.
Okay. Hey, let's take another quick break before we wrap things up here on the Garden Line. Mike, I want to show you the picture of the weed that they texted in. Let me show that to you. That way we can identify it. Maybe you can better describe it than me saying that it's a turnip, because that's not what it is. 9:55, going to take a quick break, then wrap up here on the Garden Line. We are wrapping up this Garden Line on this beautiful Tuesday, actually. Mike.
Yeah, I jogged across the control room here and looked at a picture of that weed. That is, in fact, Florida betony, which is a rattlesnake weed.
Or
hard to control. You had a name that I'd never heard before.
Yeah, called the wild artichoke.
Wild artichoke.
Florida betony. B-E-T-O-N-Y.
Why would it be called that? But anyway.
Or is it betony?
No, betony.
I'm just kidding. So, speaking of which, apparently, Florida betony tubers are in fact edible. They can be cooked like greens, the actual greens, and the tubular part can be eaten raw. It has a crunchy radish-like flavor. Get out. Why can't you just go to Publix and buy some carrots?
I was just going to say, you heard it here on the Garden Line. Don't do it.
I don't know. I didn't don't tell you to do it because I don't want you to end up on the news. Like Florida man eats weeds.
Right. Use that pre-emergence in your lawn and kind of dig them up. But generally, Florida betony will kind of die down sometime in the hot, hot weather. So, but that's what that is, called a rattlesnake weed. When you see the root on it, you'll know exactly why.
So fun. Great day, as always. Get yourself some pantyhose. That's on the list today for your gardening. And tune in next week at 9 a.m.